The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. And I'm here at the Secret Lair at the Vintage Conservatory with winemaker Rhea Kitch. Rhea, thank you so much for being a part of this.
Yeah, no problem. I wish I did make wine, but I'm actually the owner of a winery.
Okay, sorry. Yeah. So the owner of it.
Co-owner.
Yeah, co-owner with your husband.
With my husband, yeah. That's right.
How much influence do you have in terms of the style, in terms of what the final product is like? Yeah, you're not there crushing the grapes or doing the blending, but...
Yeah. So we have a style meeting usually spring, because what you grow in the vineyard also dictates your style quite a lot. Mm-hmm. So we have a style meeting in the spring, and we go through kind of past vintages and potentially other examples that we feel could be reflective of where we are terroir-wise. And I have a pretty big say, you know, but at the end of the day, I'm not the one kind of adding any yeasts or making fermentation decisions. And I do have to trust that the winemaker is going to execute, you know, and understand the vision that was portrayed, because that's a little bit arbitrary sometimes too, right?
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah.
So what would... Hard question maybe to answer, but what would you say your style is?
Yeah, it's not too hard really, like, because it's driven by where we are. So we're in the North Okanagan technically, mm-hmm. Which is, you know, 49th parallel. And so it's also pretty high elevation. It's about 450 meters. And so stylistically, it tends to be pretty acid driven, pretty cool climate. It's really great for Pinot Noir on a more delicate kind of burgundy style. And we make Riesling as well. Again, we're kind of best known for our really high acid, drier Rieslings. And then we have Pinot Gris, which is kind of quintessential Okanagan. And Chardonnay, we typically have an oaked and an unoaked. But again, like... quite a good amount of like lemon, even if it is buttery. It's like a lemon butter, you know?
Yeah. And it is funny, but Pinot Gris, it is a massive grape in the Okanagan area. It's something I didn't realize until I visited there a couple of years ago.
Yeah, it's, I think, the most widely planted still. It carried that crown for a long time. I think it still holds it.
Well, let's bounce back and forth, because we're here also on behalf of Ranger Wine, mm-hmm. and we're going to be trying eight different wines. I'm excited, and I think one of the reasons I'm excited is Stephen was nice enough to lend me a bottle of
did you give it back?
No, hell no. There's no way I'm giving it back. He gave me a bottle of your Riesling, and you know, tried it last night.
Oh, cool.
And I loved it, and we can get into it. But I poured it for my girlfriend, who is a big wine fan, also a big Riesling fan.
Perfect.
We were in Germany just a little while ago for the first time.
Lucky.
And I just poured, and I didn't say anything. Well, let me know what you think. And she had a sip and didn't say anything. And then like a second and a half later, she's like, oh, you know, give. And like, to me, it's a wonderful review.
Yeah, just that's enough right there.
Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah. This powerful mid palate, dry, wonderful Riesling. Yeah. Tell people that are listening about it, because I know that that Stephen, it's on his list. So it's a wine that is available. Tell people about the Riesling, because Okanagan Riesling isn't something people usually think of.
Yeah, it's not. You know, I would agree. And in that, we have a little microcosm in our East Kelowna, recently designated sub-GI, the East Kelowna Slopes. So there are these sub-geographical indicator regions that the Okanagan has been getting over the years. Golden Mile Bench, and there's a bunch of them. But we recently got it in the East Kelowna Slopes. And that puts us in a neighborhood with similar cool climate producers that are becoming really well known for Riesling, even on the world stage. So our Riesling is planted on a really nicely graded slope that faces southwest. It was planted in 2013. It was planted on the family's estate property, and we've managed it ourselves every year. We've often broken into two skews. Because Riesling is so amazing, it's our favorite. It's my favorite varietal typically, but it's not everybody's favorite, right? Yeah. Like the normal consumer doesn't always go to a
It's a harder Riesling. Sell than the Pinot or the Chardonnay.
100%. So we typically make two SKUs because it can like create a little bit more interest and you can show people how diverse Riesling is. And the one that you drank, I believe, is the 2020 Riesling. Mm-hmm. We also have, and we're going to taste it today. I brought it as a wild card. Steven never asked for it. It's actually like a, it's, we don't ferment it, but we store it in neutral oak for a few months.
Okay.
So it has even like a bit of a rounder palate,
right.
And it's a little bit drier even. So the typical Riesling in our portfolio is a little bit sweeter. And then usually the dry Riesling or the Esters Block Riesling, as it's become known, is even drier. And that's, again, just because of where we are. The acid levels are so amazing and we can still hang fruit out quite long. So you get a lot of flavor. And because of the exposure, it is, you know, got a lot of sun on it, and so you get those kind of petrol notes earlier, and that development happens a little sooner than in a vineyard with a lot of canopy and that's maybe older growth.
How much do you enjoy when you pour your wine for someone who's not familiar with Canada and they're coming in skeptical?
Oh, yeah.
How much do you enjoy when you can eliminate that skepticism?
Yeah, you know what? The best way to do that, I love it. And the coolest way to do it, I think, is in a blind.
Yeah.
Because you cannot help the human nature of having preconceptions.
Right.
So you're just like, oh, that's good for Canadian wine, is what you might hear if you don't. Like if you don't have a blind.
Right.
But I do think that there are some producers that are both in quality and in just sheer effort moving the needle for Canadian wine, which is really cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okanagan as a whole, I was at a Martin's Lane Checkmate event recently.
Oh,
and
cool.
Some killer wines.
Yes.
But okay, let's talk a little bit about your journey. This game I like to play sometimes. It's called the LinkedIn game.
Mm.
It's where I go and look at someone's LinkedIn account, then I cut and paste it. And I'd love for you to talk about how you went from, you know, doing yoga in 2010 to making stylistic choices of Riesling today.
Yeah, it's a great question. The precursor is actually pre-yoga. So an interesting fact about Kitsch Wines is my husband started and we built together Saks Underwear.
Mm-hmm.
So I was a business school graduate. He had just finished his MBA when we met and that was his school project. That's actually what brings me here to Ontario, as we're going to Ivy to do a talk. Anyways, that was kind of my first foray into entrepreneurship. I came from a family of employees. My grandpa worked as a postman. My mom was a single mom who worked as a paralegal. So I wasn't ready to go start businesses, and I felt that was really risky. When I met the Kitsch family, they are totally opposite. They think that it's risky to be employed because you can get fired.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's how they see it. They're like, you have your life in your own hands if you're an entrepreneur. No one's telling you when you can't work and what you can do. So that was really awesome for me to kind of recontextualize my life. My husband and I at the time weren't married, but we worked super well together. When we sold the majority of Saks Underwear, 90% of it, we moved back to the Okanagan. We were living in Vancouver working on that business. And when we moved to Kelowna, we found this kind of estate sale. It was like a, you know, the family had built this house on this property in the 70s and had passed away and their kids didn't want it. So we thought it was an amazing opportunity, and it had a couple of acres of orchard on it. So we renovated the house and then we planted vineyard and we were getting married. So we got married and my husband's parents were like, oh, what a beautiful area. They were actually looking at the house before we were, and we decided to buy it instead of them with our proceeds. And they bought next door, and then they planted, you know, we actually helped them plant 10 and a half acres of vines. We helped them build their house. And at that time I was teaching yoga and I was helping Trent with his home building company, which was building the house. And, you know, we didn't know we were going to do wine. So how does one go from one to the next? I think it's literally one foot in front of the other and just thinking anything's possible. I think when we say this is what we do, we close all these other cool doors that could be open. So why can't I do yoga and choose stylistic direction for a winery? I think that's, they're not, you know, separate from each other. They're just different. And I think we're just all capable of different things. And it's fun to explore that possibility.
And that's kind of the thing that I find cool about your journey is that it is different.
Yeah.
The classic old school, old world way is that the family's been making wine for hundreds of years. And now, you know, I was as a child with my grandfather going through the vines and I was drinking Pinot at 9 and then eventually took over. And so for you guys, it was more this entrepreneurial route. So let me ask, what came first, the desire to make wine or... Did that come before or after you guys bought that property?
It came after. What happened was we planted our favorite grape after doing a lot of diligence on what we could plant. And then when we decided it was going to be grapevines, because we really felt like the future of the Okanagan agriculture had a large part to do with the winery industry. Mm-hmm. Then it was like Riesling. Okay, that made a lot of sense for the site. It's something my husband and I both love. And so that was that. Now, why did we do a winery? Why didn't we just grow Riesling grapes and sell them? Well, because we felt as, at the time, 30-year-olds, like there wasn't really a winery that spoke to us in terms of our demographic right. and our needs. And it's like, you know, there was really fancy wineries and then there was really kind of approachable, but not necessarily high quality. And so what we wanted to do was to find and make ultimately a winery that was really approachable, but still really sophisticated. Like how can you play hip hop and still serve, you know, 92, 94 point wines?
Right. Yeah.
And how can you, you know, parlay your interest in street art with, you know, just also street art in itself is the same thing. You know, it's taking kind of what would maybe used to be cheap, cheerful graffiti, and it's really intelligent now and it really has a message. And it's now like a type of art that has its own category and collectors, you know, paid top dollar for it. And we kind of felt like that with the winery. There was like this stream that wasn't being addressed of kind of younger than 50, but still with some disposable income that wanted to have a good time and feel like they were included. It wasn't exclusive to someone who doesn't know everything about wine.
Right. Yeah. 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 And so, it's part of this podcast is to make wine more inclusive and just,
totally.
You know, because people get intimidated by wine and they shouldn't. Wine is meant to be joyful.
That's right.
Okay, so you guys, where did your love of wine come from?
I worked in a fine dining restaurant, and so I got to know the wine list, and yep. I got to serve the fancy groups. I was, you know, kind of one of the more senior servers at a certain point, and so I got to know
right.
wines. And yeah, and then I think the farming side is the part that doesn't get enough attention. It maybe seems less glamorous, but the farming is, I think, the heart of any winery. It's like, how are the grapes being farmed? You know, what's happening in the vineyard is really what you taste in the glass. No matter what a winemaker does, you know, that's at the very essence of it. And it's also at the essence of like the values of the winery. So how do they farm sustainably, organically, conventionally? And for us, we have our family, we have two young kids that are now 7 and 8, and we have two dogs and we live on the vineyard. So yeah, it's important.
You have two kids, mm-hmm. two dogs, you help run a winery, mm-hmm. you do other things on the side. How many hours of sleep do you get a night?
Oh, you know what? I think it varies. Now that my kids are older, it's totally better. It's right. like at least okay. 6 hours. Okay. I'm pretty solid on 6.
Yeah, yeah.
Last night I didn't get 6 because I flew in from BC, right. but typically, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That,
was it intimidating at all? I mean, I imagine maybe not as much because like the idea of, okay, we bought this home. We love wine. This area is going to work for wine. We're going to plant our grapes. But then, as you mentioned, the decisions about farming yeah. and then working with the winemaker and the decisions about style. I hear that. I'm like, wow, I think I'd be a little bit nervous and intimidated the first year or two.
Yeah.
But maybe you and your husband, because, as you said, you changed your mindset to go from employee to entrepreneur.
Yeah.
And with that comes a certain spirit of adventure versus I'm nervous about it. But
yeah.
What was the first couple of vintages like for you?
Well, I think we had a lot of faith in our winemaker at the time. He was managing the vineyard and making the wine. So I think that while we actually also had a cannabis company that we took public.
That's right.
And, you know, like that was a big job at the same time as having like, you know, a 1 and a 2-year-old and starting the winery. So it was a really busy time and we had to lean on people in our life. So in the winery, we had our key employee. In our family, we had a nanny who was like my sister helping mm-hmm. with the kids. You know, we had close parents. So I think, how did I overcome any feelings of uncertainty in the winery? I think it was partly like any business person will tell you when they start a business, it's naivety. Mm-hmm. So like right. ignorance is always your friend when you're starting a business. If you would have known what it took, you might not have done it. Same with Saks, same with Doja. But I think also there's like this perception on failure that really needs to probably change. And I feel strongly that today, with everybody being able to see everything you do and you can get canceled so easily, people are afraid to try things because they're afraid to fail.
Yeah.
And I think if you're not failing, you're not trying anything. So instead of looking at it as failure, looking at it as like, I'm trying something. And it is intimidating, but I'll tell you, I was actually really surprised and impressed with the community in which we existed in the winery world. Everyone was really supportive, shared tips, shared resources, approached us. Like the first day we opened our doors for the tasting room, the first guests were other winery owners and people.
That is cool. So
I think that helps cushion the fear a little.
I've seen that a lot, certainly in the Prince Edward County area where everyone is there to help everyone, because it's all about elevating. If someone here tries, you know, one of your Chardonnays or your Pinots and loves it, they're going to come to Okanagan to visit you. But then they're going to visit other vineyards around.
That's
so
right.
It's more like the better you guys do, the better everyone else does.
It's the rising tide raises all ships.
Yes.
Theory. Yeah.
You 100%. Said it much faster than I did.
I have a cliche for it.
Yeah. But so in a way, like failure, hard work failure should almost be seen as a badge of honor.
100%.
Because you went out, you tried, you took a chance, you took a risk. And if it failed, you know, as long as it wasn't done because, well, you know, we didn't know what we were doing and every decision was dumb. But, you know, if the earnest work goes into it, I mean, maybe that's kind of what you're saying, that failure needs to sometimes be viewed as a badge of honor.
I think people should be like really cheering on people who are trying things,
right,
whether or not they succeed or fail. But for some reason, success is more esteemed. And I think like I follow Sarah Blakely quite closely because she invented Spanx. And at the time, you know, Saks was kind of right behind that. And we always saw her as a great leader and example. And she had a story where she would sit at her dinner table with her family and her dad would specifically ask, "What did you fail at today?" And it was to celebrate it.
Right.
It was to be like, what did you try today? What did you try? Maybe didn't work out. Like, let's talk about it and let's like really give you some, you know, encouragement. And I think that's like cool dinner table talk, right? Because instead of like, what are your grades and what's your homework? It's like, what'd you try and maybe fail at? Like, good job. Way to go out there and give it, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like obviously a practice. You don't do that every day. I beat myself up or I compare myself. Like, we're all human. I think we could be doing things better. I question myself, but that's just part of being human. So I think it's good to have those touch points where you can remind yourself it's okay to fail.
What would you tell people about just, and again, it's a kind of a bigger question, but about Kelowna, about the wines and the wine styles near, you know, near where Kitsch Winery is?
Yeah, we're super lucky because we're only about 10-15 minutes away from downtown and about 15 minutes from the airport. We're kind of right between the two. And we sit on a we call it the bench. We're on the East Kelowna bench. So we have this like kind of cliff essentially that we're on overlooking the valley in the city, which is great, in the lake. So what would I tell people that come to Kelowna? I would say it is more scenic than you think it is. Like, it's going to be more beautiful than you think it is. And that, you know, the wines, there's 250 wineries at least in the Okanagan, which spans 100 kilometers, folks. Like, you're not going to do it in a day. It's a very big, big region, which is why these sub GIs have started coming to be, because it's just too big of an area to call a region unto its own almost. And I would tell them, you know, that each region's quite different. Like in the North Okanagan, which is kind of West Kelowna and north, you're going to get a lot of like our varietals, Chardonnay, Riesling, you know, Pinot Gris, Pinot Noir, Gewürztraminer, maybe some Gamay, but like you're not going to get very many reds. And I think a lot of people come to Kelowna being like, I love red. And we're like, we have a Pinot.
And that's what you're going to get.
If we're not sold out.
Yeah.
And then there's the, you know, South Okanagan. And now you're getting into Cabs and Merlots and Syrahs and, you know, buttery big shards and Sauvignon Blancs, you know. And people don't often know that there's that distinct kind of climate difference that really allows for different varietals to thrive.
How important is it? And I've debated with people about it. One winemaker, J.P. Collat, who makes wine, is a place called 13th Street. He doesn't care at all about appellations or things like that. He's like, no, just sell Niagara. The other side is once, you know, you put the sub-appellations, then people can understand, oh, wines from this region will be generally this. These ones will be different. And then it feels more like old world Europe, where, you know, the Appalachians bestow a certain level of gravitas to the wines. Just what are your own thoughts just on getting, because maybe sometimes it can confuse people. You don't want to give someone too much information. But then the other side, if it's so omni, oh yeah, Okanagan wine, it doesn't do credit, as you say, the difference between a Chardonnay where you are versus a Chardonnay 25 kilometers south.
Yeah, and if you're going to visit, I don't want people to be like, where's the cabs? It's like, well, you're not in the right part of the region. So my take on it is similar to, like, if you look at our labels are really simple. They're literally like three words with a bunch of white space. On the back, though, we have more verbiage, and in that is like four stats. So we have the TA, like the acidity, residual sugar, you know, the harvest date, and the pH. And why do we have that there? It's in case you're interested, in case you want to go a level deeper and a layer deeper, because at some point, someone who doesn't really know and doesn't really care and it's confusing to them may switch over to the side where now they're interested because they realize, oh, there's a lot of science and I'm more of a science guy. I thought wine was an art or a food thing, you know, or whatever the reasons might be. And I think that the sub GIs are that same principle. It's like there are more layers and levels to wine, just like anything. The more you know, the more you know you don't know. And so this gives you those kind of like levels to get a little deeper should you want to. And so if someone starts looking at Okanagan wine and is like, oh, I tried a really cool XYZ, then now you visit. As soon as you visit somewhere, the map becomes really real, right? Because you have these like flags that you can pin that you went to.
And you have a sense of ownership. Like I think that the information you put on the back of your wine and also just when you come and visit, you're like, oh, wait, I'm drinking the wine. I stood where the grapes were grown. I think that's important. The sense of ownership, people love that. It takes away the intimidation factor.
Yeah.
And also makes people more loyal to a winery because once they know about it, they feel a small part of it. Yeah, connected. Yes. They feel connected to it.
Agreed. I think coming to our winery is paramount in our experience. So our winery is a bit unorthodox and sometimes people don't always resonate with it, but a lot of people think it's amazing because it's this big chateau type granite building. But we're in the garage. So when you get there, you're like, oh my God, this is amazing. And then it's like, come around back to the garage. And then you come around back to the garage and there's the huge sweeping views of the lake. And we're playing again, like whatever kind of cool music we like. It's very unpretentious, but the wines are delicious. The people pouring the wines know a lot about them. If you want to talk about that. But that's, we can also talk about wakeboarding on the weekend or whatever.
Right.
Point being, when people go to Kitsch, they get a much deeper connection. And that's where we see a lot of like people signing up for a wine club or people, you know, just like bringing guests back over and over again. Cause it's got that, like you said, connection to it.
Yeah. Just a cool, different experience. Mm-hmm. All right. Difficult question. What would you, your favorite Chardonnay, your favorite Riesling, and your favorite Pinot. What song or band would you pair with it? We'll start with your Riesling, your favorite Riesling. Is there a song or a band that you would pair with it?
Well, it's funny you should ask. We actually have Spotify playlists. So there's a Kitsch Wine Spotify account and you can search our user and we have a playlist for Pinot.
Yeah. Really?
That's called Ride It My Pinot, and it's a playoff Genuine's Ride It My Pony. Mm-hmm. And then there's Beasting Off the Riesling, which is a playoff Kanye's lyrics. We have a Chardonnay playlist as well. Mm-hmm. I think it's called Chardonnay All Day. So any one of those wines are great to pair. Generally, something a little bit sexier with Pinot, something a little more like party with Riesling, and then with Chardonnay. Chardonnay feels just like kind of classics, you know?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, no, that makes sense. So maybe Public Enemy.
Yeah. You know, there you go.
Because you were mentioning hip hop a couple times in classic, or we'll get a little Grandmaster Flash and the Furious
Love
Five.
Love it. Beastie Boys is one of my favorites.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And who doesn't like Beastie Boys and Chardonnay?
Right.
So you were talking before about it being Burgundian. We'll talk about your Pinot for a second. What is it? I think it always means something different to everyone. Mm-hmm. And everyone who makes Pinot in the New World always likes to say Burgundian.
Of course.
You know, I'm still waiting for the first Pinot producer to say, I hate Burgundy. That wine is shit. And we try to make it the exact opposite. Lots of sugar. We blend in some Syrah. just for you, when you say Burgundy or the philosophy behind your Pinot, what would it be?
Well, okay. So I'll preface this with saying we've had two different winemakers. Mm-hmm. And so it, as much as you can try to drive style, I do think that winemakers are the ones painting the picture at the end of the day.
Right.
So our original winemaker, I would say, was more Burgundian in the end result. And why do I say that? To me, it was more delicate. It was more feminine. It was a little bit lighter bodied. It wasn't left to hang so long.
Yep.
It was a little bit more almost like earthy, floral. You know, it still had obviously the red fruits and those qualities, but it just had a little bit more of a feminine overall and a really silky palate. Like the mouthfeel was really velvety. Flash forward to another winemaker, and it becomes a little bit, like you were saying almost a second time, like it becomes a little bit fuller bodied. Like he liked to leave the fruit out to hang a bit longer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the picking decision, I think, is like, aside from obviously the viticulture the whole way leading up, the picking decision is the like most critical decision in making wine. And so these two particular winemakers picked, you know, like within like, it was like a 2-week difference of what they probably would have picked.
And so yet it makes stylistically, it can be so different.
Well, that's what the result is. Yeah.
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 That's cool.
So it's fascinating.
Yeah. And we'll wrap this up in a couple of minutes because we got people, the tastings can be starting in just a little bit. How much influence do you and your husband have on the pick date? Because I would be like, do I get totally involved? Do I stay away? Do I meddle? Like
totally. That's actually the case with all the vineyard stuff because we live on it.
Yeah.
So it's like you see it and you're like, why is the like mid row this long? Or like, why hasn't it been this happened yet?
And then you passive aggressively go to the, hey, so yeah, I noticed that.
Totally.
Feels like a picking day, doesn't it?
So for the pick date, it's driven off the style. And so we're basically looking for Brix and acid levels.
Right.
And so when we're approaching those levels, it becomes partly the upcoming weather. You know, is it going to rain in the next 3 days? We got to pick before it rains. Or is it like also labor? Like when can we get the hands? Mm-hmm. That becomes a part of it. And also because you want to crush the day you pick, we can only pick, you know, 6 tons worth a day. So it's like you also have, because we have a 3-ton press. So it's like there's all the mathematics that go into it. So I think if we're all agreed, like this is the style, which means we're basically going with this kind of Brix and acid, and obviously we're tasting for flavor. And then we're looking at the weather and the actual logistics, it becomes pretty like there's not a lot of argument to it, you know.
Right.
It's like pretty clear how that puzzle fits together, so I don't need to meddle too much. As long as the style, Brix, pH, flavor is all agreed upon, it should be pretty good to go.
Well, I'm curious, not only try the Pinots and Chards, but I'm curious for your Syrah, because you are more cool climate, and it's one thing I learned about Okanagan. I did not, my knowledge was minimal many, many years ago, and I love the Syrahs, and I love the Merlots as well.
Yeah, the Merlots awesome. Are just, well, especially if you went to a Checkmate. I mean, they have some beautiful Merlots.
Oh, they're just killer. But I'm curious to try. Mm. I'm curious to try your Syrah.
Yeah, so the Syrah was from that second winemaker I'd mentioned, and he had a big experience down south. So his name is Graham Pierce, and he kind of made the Nota Bene Black Hills.
Oh yes, of
that
course.
That was his kind of like feather in his cap, and so that's why he also liked a Pinot that hung out a bit longer and was a bit fuller bodied. So we asked him when he started with us, what it would be your favorite grape? Like if you could make anything, what would you want to make? And what would make you just like so happy to make? Because I think people do the best when they're given, you know, those opportunities. And he was like, well, Syrah is my wheelhouse. And we were like, okay, well, if you can find some good Syrah, you know, even though it's not East Kelowna, cool climate, happy to like indulge you in that.
Oh.
And so he found a good vineyard and he made a Syrah, and it's delectable. It's delicious. And it's, you know, again, where we are in East Kelowna, there's not a lot of vineyard land because we are on the slopes. So I think for any of us that were trying to grow or are trying to grow, you do have to look further afield sometimes. We've since decided to just go straight vineyard on that note, like, because it's just too hard to ensure consistency of quantity and quality. And we have decided to go kind of like back to our origins and roots and just make a state grown fruit. And, you know, if we can only service our wine club, then that's all we'll service and just kind of keep it tight. But at the time, we really wanted to kind of see what we could do and right. also indulge this winemaker. So I think you'll like this shot. It's
cool.
Delicious.
Cool. Well, mm-hmm. listen, really appreciate you doing the pod. Before we end, promote, where can people, you know, because they're going to have to come visit you.
Yeah.
You're not going to be able to go to the LCBO and get this wine. Maybe through Ranger yeah. Wine, you can get it at rangerwine.com. But
that's right.
But for yourself, where can people find you? Where can people go?
Thanks. Yeah. So definitely look at rangerwine.com. We also have a wine club that ships across Canada, and there's 3 shipments a year. So you either get 4 or 8 bottles 3 times a year, and you can mix and match wine, which is quite nice. We are in a couple of the smaller private stores here in the city in Toronto through Stephen Ranger and Ranger Wine, which is awesome. Otherwise, we're in the Okanagan, we're in BC, we're in some select Alberta locations, but we're, you know, pretty boutique. So if you yeah. find us, scoop us, and if not, look online, kitchwines.ca.
Perfect. Hey, really appreciate it. Thank you so much. Congrats on the success so far, on just everything you and your husband have done entrepreneurially.
Thanks.
And what's great is it's a wide range.
Yeah.
You know, like if you look at your journey, it is a wide range of different endeavors.
It is. Yeah. Weed, wine, and underwear. It's a very unique bag of things.
Weed, wine, and underwear.
Yeah. You know? It's, I don't know how it came to be, but it's because you don't put on blinders. You kind of just open to the possibilities of the world, and that's, so far it's worked out. Check back in 20.
I can't wait to see what 5 years from now what you guys will be up to. Thanks again.
Thanks, Matt.
Thanks everyone for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Remember, you can find me on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, and wherever quality podcasts are sold.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.